Next item on our agenda is litigation and structured negotiation update. Linda M. Dardarian, partner, Goldstein, Borgen, Dardarian, and Ho, from Oakland, California. Katrina L. Island, associate, Goldstein, Borgen, Dardarian, and Ho, Oakland, California. Kevin Nestrick, senior staff attorney, disability rights advocates, Oakland, California. Join members of CCB's legal team from Goldstein, Borgen, Dardarian, and Ho, and disability rights advocates for the annual update about cases in which CCB is involved through either litigation or structured negotiations to ensure greater independence and inclusion of people with visual impairments. The update will cover access to health care, education, travel, and retail. Hear what the team is currently doing to improve access to websites, information, and services. Oh boy, our favorite. Information and service kiosks. Yes. Other equipment, prescription information, and other alternative formats. Bring your ideas of what they should be doing next. Please give them a warm welcome to our conference and convention.
Thank you, everybody, and thank you, Donna, for the introduction. This is Linda Dardarian. One update on presenters. Katrina couldn't make it today, but instead we have something even better. Mike Nunez from Disability Rights Advocates, and Mike is going to start us off with some very, very exciting news.
Hi, everyone. This is Michael. It's nice to be here. I'm glad I could join you all. So I'd like to update everybody on a case that CCB is involved with regarding access to voting. It's a really important issue. It's long overdue, and we have some really exciting positive news to share. But in case all of you aren't familiar with the case, which is against the County of Alameda, I'm going to give you some background and tell you about how the case came to be and why we're so excited about a recent landmark decision that we received from the court in this case. So about a year ago, shortly after the November 2012 election, we started receiving calls and complaints from blind voters in the County of Alameda about their voting experiences during the November 2012 election. Now, many of you may know that the Help America Vote Act and California state law require that counties and other public entities that are administering elections provide talking voting machines to enable blind voters to privately and independently vote. The County of Alameda had provided these machines at poll sites, at least as far as we've heard, but the complaints were essentially a little different. What we were hearing from voters was that although the machines were physically at the poll sites, that blind voters weren't able to vote because the machines didn't work when they tried to use them. The accessible features, the text-to-speech output and the tactile controls wouldn't work. And so some of these voters who brought complaints to us reported that, you know, they had spent anywhere from 30 minutes to several hours at poll sites waiting for poll workers to try to troubleshoot problems with the machines, call for assistance, call for replacements, and in three instances, you know, to go to second poll sites, additional poll sites, and try to use the accessible voting machines at those poll sites, only to find that the accessible voting machines there weren't working either. You know, this was a really concerning problem to us, and we had heard about sporadic reports of this sort of thing happening in other counties and locations as well. So we decided to investigate the issue. And after doing some fact investigation at the end of 2012 and in the beginning of 2013, we found that this seemed to be a widespread problem in the county of Alameda, and you know, that it was a serious problem important to the community as well. After, you know, conferring with CCB's leadership as well, we learned that this problem isn't unique to the county. It's a problem that is that folks have experienced in other counties across the state, in Los Angeles and other places in Southern California. So we realized that this is something we really needed to start tackling. We also did some preliminary legal research and found some bad cases that were a little worrisome. So there have been courts in the past that have looked at the right to access voting machines under federal disability laws. Now, many of you may be thinking to yourselves, you know, the Help America Vote Act, HAVA, requires these machines, so it seems pretty clear that, you know, that they need to be there and functional. It's true that HAVA requires these machines, but an unfortunate fact about HAVA is that private individuals can't sue to enforce HAVA. Only the government can enforce HAVA. So, you know, if a county violates HAVA, you might be very upset. I would be very upset, but we can't use that law to try and compel the county to provide voting machines and to get people privately and independently voting. So we had to look to, you know, our stalwart allies, the Americans with Disabilities Act and the Rehabilitation Act. And courts that had looked at whether these laws require private and independent voting hadn't directly addressed the issue, but had suggested that the ADA and the Rehabilitation Act don't actually require that blind voters get to privately and independently vote. The courts had suggested that just providing a sighted assistant who could basically fill out a ballot for a blind voter was enough. So, you know, we saw these cases and we were a little concerned. But we did more powwowing with CCB leadership and our legal team, and we decided, you know what, this is a problem we think needs to get tackled, and we need to correct this bad case law, because in this day and age, with the kind of technology that's available, you know, kiosks, touchscreen tablets, smartphones that are accessible, it's pretty inexcusable that a county, a public entity administering a public public election, could circumvent or get out of its obligation to make sure that blind voters get to vote privately and independently, just as all other voters in the U.S. get to vote and have been able to vote for over 100 years. So we decided to move forward and try to tackle the problem. We initially approached the county in the early part of this year to request that they, you know, look at the problem, understand the problem, and then take a number of steps to fix the problem. You know, there are several steps that can be taken to make sure that blind voters are able to more reliably, privately and independently vote at poll sites during elections. You know, there's always going to be the occasional situation where machines malfunction, but the county can do a lot to make sure that those situations are at a minimum. So, for instance, improving poll worker training so that poll workers are more familiar with operation of the machines, ensuring that there are replacement accessible voting machines on hand so that way if one machine for whatever reason can't work or we can't get it to start working, they can just, you know, pop open another box and set up a replacement accessible voting machine pretty quickly. Making sure that there is open access to technical support that's very familiar with troubleshooting problems with accessible voting machines. And so there are a number of steps that can be taken to make sure that these problems are at a minimum. So we basically laid this out to the county, and this is probably not a spoiler alert, but we weren't able to reach a settlement agreement at that time. So we decided to move forward and file a federal complaint in federal court. So we ended up filing a case in the Northern District of California, U.S. District Court, on behalf of CCB and five individual voters from the county of Alameda, alleging violations of the ADA and the Rehabilitation Act, as well as state laws. So in response to our lawsuit, the county filed what's called a motion to dismiss, which is basically an effort to try to get our case thrown out of court. And they basically said, that they hadn't violated the law because the ADA and the Rehabilitation Act don't require that they do anything to make sure the voting machines work for blind voters. The ADA and the Rehabilitation Act only require that they make sure that blind people can vote, even if that means having blind people dictate their votes to sighted strangers who record the ballots for them. But we had expected that this might be something the county would do, since we had, done that preliminary research I mentioned to you. And we did our briefing in this process in September, and we had a very exciting hearing last week on this issue. And the judge opened the hearing by sharing his preliminary thoughts. Now, I will tell you, leading up to the hearing, we spent a lot of time preparing our briefs and our arguments so that we could present our case and your case as strongly as possible. That being said, I think that all of the attorneys on the team felt like this was going to be a tough fight. There are these bad cases out there, and there weren't any other cases out there on the books that said that the ADA and the Rehabilitation Act do actually require that blind voters get to privately and independently vote. So we were trying to get the first one on the books. So, we weren't sure what to expect, but the judge opened the hearing last Friday by sharing his thoughts that basically he completely agreed with us. He completely agreed with CCB's position and our position. I'm glad you guys are happy about that. I am too. We all are too. So he said basically that the ADA and the Rehabilitation Act requirements, they evolve as the technological capabilities of society evolve. They're not frozen in time. They're not frozen in 1990 when the ADA was passed, or in the 70s when the Rehabilitation Act was passed. So as accommodations and modifications become easier over time, the ADA's requirements broaden. They grow in scope. So in this instance, what he basically said was that in this day and age where accessible voting machines are ubiquitous, they're commonplace, they're readily available, and they're not new. They've been around for a while now, that the ADA and the Rehabilitation Act require that blind voters receive the right to privately and independently vote. So Yes, we are thrilled about that. And the hearing was also a good experience because, you know, many members of the community were there, including Donna Pomerant, CCB's very own president. And the judge was pressing the attorney for the county, the attorney for the defendants, to, you know, clearly state their position, which they had clearly written in their written papers, which was that, you know, the ADA and the Rehabilitation Act, they don't require any private and independent voting for blind people. But the defense attorney was clearly squirming there as he was facing down the members of the community who were there and being asked to state that position in front of them. So it was a sight to see and a sight to hear as he squirmed trying to avoid saying what they had clearly stated. But at the end of the day, the judge said that he planned to issue a ruling that said exactly this and that would codify his sort of views that he had delivered orally that day. And on Wednesday, 2 days ago, the judge issued a 23-page ruling where he exhaustively went through and supported his position, which is the first decision in the country to rule that the ADA and the Rehabilitation Act require private and independent voting. He rejected all of those other cases that, you know, we had been worried about and that the defendant had pointed to as being sort of poorly reasoned and out of date. And he rejected the defendant's efforts to get our case thrown out. So now our case is able to continue, and we are optimistic that this very positive ruling will make it easier for us to either A, litigate the case until we hopefully prevail on getting a good fix to the problem of ensuring voting machines are working during elections, or the alternative being getting a good settlement agreement with the county. So we're planning on reaching out to the county and seeing if now that we have this solid ruling behind us, they're going to be more willing than they were 6 months ago to sit down and try to reach a reasonable settlement agreement that'll make sure that there are procedures and policies and backups in place to make sure that people aren't left hanging when there are problems with voting machines in the county. So this is, you know, a great victory for voters in the county of Alameda, but it's also a great decision on a national scale. It turns the tide on a string of several bad rulings that courts have issued over the past 15 years about narrowly interpreting the ADA and the Rehabilitation Act when it comes to voting. And it also is going to make it easier for advocates in other counties and other jurisdictions around the country to try and advocate for improvements in voting accessibility and access to talking voting machines in their counties and in their jurisdictions. So we're really hoping that this case and this decision not only improves access in the county of Alameda, but that it serves as a critical watershed turning point in the fight for ensuring that blind voters get access to this really essential civic experience that, you know, so many sighted voters have been able to enjoy for over a century.
This is Kevin Nestrick, Disability Rights Advocates. Great recap, Mike. I know Mike has been working very hard on this case, as with many others. He got a real vigorous advocate for advocating for CCB's rights and CCB members' rights with Mike, as you can see. I wanted to provide an update on another matter that Disability Rights Advocates is working together with Linda Dardarian's firm on behalf of CCB. This matter is more is in the context of structured negotiations where we represent CCB and a number of individual CCB members in a structured negotiations with Kaiser seeking to improve access for a whole range of services that Kaiser provides for blind and visually impaired members. A little background on this issue. DRA had a settlement agreement with Kaiser, and as part of that settlement agreement, we tackled a lot of physical barrier issues. We also addressed some issues affecting people with people who are blind and visually impaired. But at the end of that settlement, we were still continuing to receive kind of a second wave of complaints about numerous failings in Kaiser's system. So with that information, and really it was the detailed information that a lot of CCB members provided, and also the organization placing its name on this complaint, we submitted over 30 pages of detailed testimony, information, legal argument about the way Kaiser was continuing to fail its obligations. That ultimately led to some back and forth, and ultimately we got into structured negotiations with Kaiser only after threatening to sue and being prepared to sue and file a lawsuit sort of on the eve of that decision. They agreed to enter into negotiations. The road traveled since that time has been long and a tough go. We are making progress. I'm confident we're going to get a significant result, but it's taking significant effort to get there. We're seeking to address the whole range of issues. So just the list includes physical access, path of travel, wayfinding, a whole range of issues related to alternative formats for all kinds of print materials, all kinds of healthcare related information that's provided to Kaiser members. Members are that's what Kaiser calls its patients and people who seek their services. And it's only increasing the amount of information that's being communicated back and forth in a variety of ways, both in print and in electronic forms. With the passage of the Affordable Care Act, there's new requirements for the creation of electronic health records and for making that information available, making various healthcare information available electronically, scheduling appointments, emailing your doctor, getting test results, getting lab results. We are seeking to make sure that all that information is accessible in a format that the members we represent can use. And so that means every type of alternative format. So someone who wants Braille can get Braille. Someone who wants it in audio form can get it in a CD. Someone who wants to get it as an electronic file and read it on their computer can do it that way as well. There are some electronic systems within the hospital network, and when I'm talking about Kaiser, it's 30 hospitals and affiliated facilities throughout Northern and Southern California. There are paging systems in laboratories and in the pharmacies, and the accommodation needs for those places, those important, critical aspects of healthcare, it's really haphazard the way that accessibility is provided. So we're seeking to obtain some kind of uniform system so that you know what to expect when you go into a Kaiser facility. Another issue that remains is the need for staff training and an understanding of how better to serve Kaiser members who are blind or have visual impairments, how to better serve their needs, how to ensure that regular training is provided and mandated so that staff members are aware and also a more responsive system to respond to your individual complaints. rather than calling the general 800 number to try to get some staff members who are more specifically trained in the issues that may affect you, and so they can try to resolve them more quickly. So that's what we're after. We're in the midst of negotiations. We are working, you know, on an agreement as we speak. If you do have if you are a Kaiser member and you do have issues with the way that you, they're providing services to you, we do want to hear from you. It's just more information, the better for us, because from their perspective, they feel like they're doing a good enough job, and it's us dragging them along the way, telling them no, they're not, and it's really with the individual stories that show the give the real world life examples that, you know, I think is going to help us get to the result we want. Final aspect of this has to do with talking prescriptions, availability of those. I'm going to turn this over to Linda Dardarian, who's done a lot of work in this area.
Thanks, Kevin. The one of the big initiatives that CCB and ACB and AFB as well have been undertaking in the last few years has involved increasing access to prescription information, both the words that appear on the prescription label that's attached to medication bottles and boxes and tubes, and the patient information sheets that the pharmacies provide that go along with the medication that have more description about what the medication does, what the side effects are, and different information that's important to know how to safely take your medications. So we have been seeking access to both prescription labels and patient information sheets. And the efforts have proceeded on two separate fronts. One front you may all know about is the Access Board's Best Practices Committee, where the ACB, CCB, AFB, and other members of the blindness community, along with industry, so representatives from the major pharmacy chains, met together and came up with a list of best practices this summer, which include things like talking prescriptions, large print labels and prescription information sheets, other audio formats, electronic formats, and Braille. In addition, we have been in structured negotiations, we being my office and Lainey Feingold, on behalf of ACB, CCB, and AFB, with most of the major pharmacy chains in the country to require them to provide alternative formats for pill bottle labels and patient information sheets. And as a result of those negotiations, we have one settlement agreement that has been achieved with Walmart. And Walmart agreed to provide talking prescription information through a method called Script Talk. The way Script Talk works is the company that created Script Talk, Envision America, sends out a digital reader to anyone who calls the 800 number and asks for it, who has a visual impairment, and they send those out for free. What the pharmacy does is the pharmacy has a printer that prints the prescription label information on a special label that has a computer chip embedded in it. And they attach the computer chip label onto the prescription bottle or box or tube. And the patient then receives, or the customer receives, the prescription bottle from Walmart. And you hold the bottle over the reader, and it announces everything that's on the label. It's complete, and it's accurate, and it's through a synthesized voice So the pharmacist does not have to actually read the prescription label into like a tape recorder and attach it to the pill bottle. Instead, the work is all done automatically by the computer printer. So ScriptTok is available for free to Walmart customers. So if you have a medication plan that is allows you to get your prescriptions from Walmart, you can currently get them for free with the ScriptTok method. Well, I don't know if the pills are free, but the that depends on your medical plan. Yeah, it depends on the copay. But the ScriptTok label and the ScriptTok device are free. So that is available through Walmart mail order and through specified stores around the country. This agreement is set to expire at the end of this year. Before the end of the year, we will be having another negotiation session with Walmart to talk about what their plan is for the future, whether they're going to continue with ScriptTok, whether they're going to roll it out to additional stores, or if they're going to change to a different method. But Walmart has committed to the need for providing independent access for its customers with visual impairments to the prescription information that is essential to taking your medications safely and independently. We are also currently still in negotiations with Walgreens and CVS about accessible audible prescription information and alternative formats for patient information sheets. And we hope to have something positive to report on both of those before the end of the year. Target is in negotiations with us on accessible prescription information, and Rite Aid has also signed an agreement to negotiate with us over accessible prescription information. The problem with Rite Aid is that we are going back and forth, and they have made a lot of arguments that accessible prescription information through a talking pill bottle for the label information or alternative formats are not necessary because they have pharmacy staff available 24/7 to read information to people over the telephone. So no is the right answer to that argument. We were prepared to file a lawsuit against Rite Aid. We had a plaintiff. The plaintiff was Patricia LaFrance Wolf. Very, very sadly, Patricia has passed away for many reasons. We miss her terribly. We are looking for others to step up who are willing to take on Rite Aid. So if you're a customer of Rite Aid for their prescriptions, for medications, prescribed medications, please let me know. I'd like to take a show of hands so that I can see who else is.
Raise your hands if you're.
Yeah.
Wait.
Sorry, Margie.
Wait.
Okay, Jean.
I was going to ask, does it make a difference whether it's Northern or Southern California?
That's a great question, Jean. Initially, we were seeking people in the Bay Area, but there is not a lot. Rite Aid is not that ubiquitous in the Bay Area. They have many more stores in the Sacramento area and in Los Angeles. We think that Los Angeles is a better area for the issue because we think the courts are more sympathetic. But if we have to, we'll file it in the Eastern District, which is where Sacramento is, because we think that if what we really would do is we would use the voting decision to springboard into getting a court to rule in favor of the need for independent and safe and private ability to take your medications. So I think now with the voting decision, we could pretty much bring the case anywhere, and we would, our chances would be pretty good.
So what you're stating is
that, okay, Sorry. What you're stating is that if a person is currently receiving their prescription medication from a Rite Aid, for them to please contact you.
Yes.
That's what you wish.
Yes.
Okay.
That would be great.
Thank you.
There's a hand up in the back.
What I
or
would
should
like
we just take
actually
comments at the end.
What I would like to ask, Sergeant is and I Sergeant Jonathan Lowe is already here. I have him scheduled to present at 3:20. If we could start that at 3:25, do you wish to share more about cases, or do you wish to take question and answers?
I think we'll do another few minutes of sharing cases, and then we'll, if we have time for a couple questions and answers, that would be great too.
Perfect. Thank you.
In the area of access to healthcare information and services, we have a very similar set of negotiations. We actually have a settlement agreement with the Sutter Hospital chain covering all of the same issues that Kevin discussed us having with Kaiser. One of the issues with Kaiser is Kaiser does provide talking pill bottles, but this is also similar to the voting situation. It's one step to get the accessible equipment. It's a second step to make sure that the accessible equipment remains well-maintained and used, and that the people that are providing the equipment know how to make it available to voters or customers or patients with visual impairments. So even though Kaiser has a program for providing talking pill bottles, the staff at the different Kaiser pharmacies don't always know that they have it, so they don't make it available. They don't always record all of the information accurately and completely. And so, I'm sorry?
And you're not able to get it through.
And you're not able to get it. They are supposed to provide it through the mail, but they don't. It's very sporadic. So it should be consistent, and it should be regular, and it's not. So we're working on improving the delivery of complete and accurate talking pill bottles from Kaiser. Kevin, did you want to talk about kiosks?
Sure.
Okay.
So real quickly, one matter that we're looking into in terms of future advocacy is in the area of kiosks, and specifically health kiosks. There is a brand of health kiosk called the Solo Health Machine that has been rolled out nationally to Walmart stores, Sam's Club stores, Safeway stores, Publix supermarkets, a number of CVS locations. And these machines are growing at a rapid rate. They're reporting getting 130,000 visits per day to these machines, that they've served over 32 million unique visitors to these machines. And these are health check-in machines, the whole idea being that a person goes to a Walmart much more frequently than a doctor, and wouldn't it be, it's a good idea to have someone check in on their health, get their blood pressure taken, get a body mass index, have a various types of health screening, get referrals to nearby doctors. This Solo Health kiosk has recently partnered with a Department of Health and Human Services to provide information about the Affordable Care Act and about the various health markets and the marketplace and various aspects of the Affordable Care Act. The kiosks are totally inaccessible. And what we're seeking to challenge the inaccessibility of the kiosks and try to make them independently accessible, much like an ATM would be. So that's an ongoing investigation. I'd encourage you, if you shop at any of those locations, to go visit them, check out, see what it's about. They're located in the pharmacy department, and we're interested in speaking with you if you want to help us change the accessibility of the machines. Mike, did you want to talk about Redbox quickly?
Sure. So I, this is Michael again, and I would like to share a bit of information with you about our case against Redbox Automated Retail. So by way of background, Redbox operates a set of touchscreen interactive self-service kiosks. They're video rental kiosks.
And essentially what you can do at a kiosk is walk up, browse a library of DVDs, Blu-rays, and other media content that a kiosk has available, and then you can rent, pay for, take home, and then return a DVD or Blu-ray or whatever you rented. And the rates are pretty affordable, which is very appealing. I think when we originally started looking into this matter, it was $1 a day. I think the price is slightly higher now, maybe 20 cents higher, but you know, pretty decent prices. But so getting access to that was an issue brought to us by the Lighthouse for the Blind in San Francisco, as well as several blind individuals in the Bay Area. And you know, in addition to being interested in you know gaining access and providing access to these kiosks, we had a broader interest in mind as well, which is to get precedent out there that says that these kiosks, which are becoming increasingly more commonplace in all sorts of business environments, that these kiosks need to be accessible to blind and visually impaired customers, because we're seeing more and more businesses use those devices as a method to interact with their customers. We wanted to make sure that the blind and visually impaired community wouldn't get left behind and wouldn't be shut out of this aspect of the marketplace. So when the Lighthouse brought this issue to us in 2011, we started looking into it, and we reached out to Redbox to ask that they basically modify their kiosks to make them accessible in an ATM-style fashion, you know, with controls that would allow blind customers to browse and utilize and access all of the services at the kiosks. This isn't a surprise, but you know that initial outreach did not lead to an agreement. So in early 2012, we filed a case in federal court against Redbox as well as Save Mart, which is a grocery chain that partners with Redbox and has a lot of Redbox kiosks in its stores. So Redbox and Save Mart initially fought us in litigation for a few months, but after we were able to overcome their initial challenges to our case, we and Redbox agreed to enter into settlement negotiations through mediation. And so we began that process in summer of 2012. And you know, it's been a very long and slow process, but we have been making a lot of progress in 2013. And I'm happy to say that we on the team are really optimistic about our chances of reaching a settlement agreement with Redbox that would provide independent access to all of the services at Redbox kiosks. To blind and visually impaired customers, so that as a blind or visually impaired customer, you could walk up to a Redbox kiosk and without any assistance from somebody else, activate the accessibility features and then navigate through the available media and then select, pay for, and get your movie or if you're a parent or a video gamer, you know, get the game out of the kiosk and then bring it back and go through the return process as well. So I can't share with you the specifics of the technical pieces of the agreement that we're putting together because that's still confidential. But I can tell you that, you know, there are two sort of obvious ways of making a kiosk, a touchscreen kiosk like a Redbox kiosk, accessible. One is through the sort of ATM style access features that you see and interact with on a regular basis, which are, you know, a tactile keypad or some sort of tactile controls that allow you to navigate and interact with the kiosk's content. A headphone jack that would allow you to get audio output in a private manner, and then text-to-speech output that would read all of the controls and the information necessary to use the services on the kiosks. So that's one way. Another way would be through some sort of gesture-based screen reader, like similar to the screen readers that you find on the iPhones or on the TalkBack in the Android operating system for Google devices, or in the newest version of the JAWS screen reader. So those are sort of the two types of access solutions that we look to for guidance when we were when we have been working to reach an agreement with Redbox. And like I said, we're optimistic that we will be able to get to an agreement where the kiosks are where kiosks across the state are made accessible for blind and visually impaired customers.
I know we're almost out of time. I'd like to just very quickly mention three other settlements that CCB has been involved in the last year. Talking about, you know, on the subject of movies, due to CCB's efforts and the efforts of many CCB members, all Cinemark theaters, not only in California, but across the country, now have audio description equipment. So you can go to any Cinemark theater that has a first-run movie, that if the movie comes described from the studio, Cinemark theaters have the equipment to play it. So call your Cinemark theater, find out whether the movie you want to see has audio description, and if it has come with description from the studio, they have the equipment to play it. So hopefully you can all go and have a whole new movie experience thanks to CCB.
Yay.
And another big initiative in the health healthcare and information arena is the settlement that ACB and some CCB members have entered into in the last year with Weight Watchers. Weight Watchers has committed to make its website, the website-based tools for weight loss, and its mobile application accessible to people with visual impairments who use screen readers and screen enlargement software. It is also committed to making all of the print materials that it provides at weekly meetings and through the mail accessible in alternative formats, including Braille, audio, and large print. And I think this is the first in the country. The large print standards that Weight Watchers is using are those that were developed by the CCLVI. And then hopefully within the next couple of months, we'll also be able to announce an agreement with WellPoint for making member materials accessible in alternative formats, again using the CCLVI standards for large print, BANA for Braille, and they're making their websites, all of their websites, accessible to people who use screen readers and screen enlargement software, thanks to Steve Mendelson. So, Donna, do we have time for any questions?
We have time. We have time for two questions. And I, Margie had called for the floor previously, and then I heard Ken Metz.
Ken and Crispy Crespin is up too. Yeah.
Christy's been up.
So, Linda,
hold on.
I just have a question for you in reference to the various pharmacies you mentioned.
Yes.
As you know, I get most of my prescriptions mail order. But if I need something such as antibiotics, I get it from a local store. Is that sufficient enough with Rite Aid if I get an occasional prescription from a local store?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll do Ken, and then we'll do Christy, and then that will be it. Since Margie was short for a change.
I'll make up for her time.
Oh, no. Okay, we'll cut him off.
Linda, question for you, or hey, maybe a comment. It's in regards to the Walmart issue. I am using the Script Talk, actually, and there are so many advantages to it, only because you can get the side effects. It gives you a phone number to call and a code number, so it's really neat to be able to do that. What happens, however, is, A, as I think some of us know, it's only through their mail order, plus several stores. I went to my local Walmart out in the San Fernando Valley, and they have, I've been there three different times and brought the information, and I keep going back, and they keep saying, well, we're not hearing anything from the home office. So I can't get it at the local store, and my insurance company told me before I signed up for my health plan last year that I could use Walmart mail order. Once I signed up and became a member, they changed their mind.
Oh,
so,
wow.
So I can use Walmart mail order as long as I go into their special 90-day program order that they have, but it's not covering all of my medications because it's not under my insurance. So there are some real issues with that and trying to deal with the local Walmart pharmacies to get them to accept and talk with their home office to get the Script Talk working in the local store.
Okay. Ken, I think if we can set up a call with between you and Scott Grimes of my office next week to get more information, that would be great. And for anyone else, we are going to be having a meeting with Walmart in the next like month or so to talk about whether they're willing to expand the Script Talk program or if they're going to switch to something else. So if you have Walmart or if you want to be able to get your prescriptions through a Walmart store in addition to or instead of mail order, please contact my office because we need that information before we go into this meeting with them.
Okay, to advocate, I'm willing to do that or to go to Rite Aid, whichever you want me to do.
Or both, you know.
Okay, Christy.
Thanks.
Christy will be the last.
Okay. I am a member of Weight Watchers. I have been going through this struggle by myself, so I didn't know what was going on, and I had been asking questions and questions. I would like to be a part of your structured negotiations. I have been working with Weight Watchers for a year, and I am about at goal. And I'm going to be on the maintenance program, but it is pretty difficult. They changed the active link, and I can't use the active link now the way I used to use it, so they made it worse. And I also want to be able to use the tracking system better and to use the I just got my iPhone, so I have now the smartphone app. But I'm a little bit frustrated because any chance that I had of doing anything was just really not very well dealt with, and so I'd like to get involved with
this. Thanks, Christy. We're no longer in structured negotiations because they did sign a settlement agreement, so they've actually committed to accessibility. So I'm going to ask Charlotte to give you a call next week to get more details. Is that... Yeah, and you know Charlotte, so and we'll do what we can to get that straightened out for you.
Okay. Thank you very, very much for being with us today and sharing your time with us.
Yeah. Thank you for having us. It's always a real pleasure and honor to be part of a CCB convention.
Thank you.
And thank you for letting us do all this work on your behalf, because without you, we wouldn't have anything to do.
So keep us busy. It is definitely a partnership. Thank you so much. Thank you. And...